Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Well, welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg, your host, and today I'm joined by Carl Carlson. Welcome, Carl. Good to hear from you again.
Yeah, glad to be here, Fred, and talk about our subjects. I was thinking today maybe we can talk about the roadblocks to overcome in achieving reliability. In each of my classes that I teach, I usually ask the students, after we've taught the material, what are some roadblocks that you're concerned about when you go back to your companies? And then we talk over how to overcome them, because you can be trained really well. You can get the basics very nicely, but you can also run smack dab into certain problems inside the company that become difficult to overcome. So I thought that'd be a good thing to talk about today.
Excellent idea. I ask a very similar one in the course I teach at Maryland, and it's amazing how consistent it is that this, you know, we always blame management for one thing or another, yet that's probably, I don't know about you, but that seems to be the number one on my list of just ambivalent management support. And then what do you do about that?
Yeah, that likewise, Fred, that comes up consistently with the people that I teach. And it's real. So it's not just out there in a fluffy type of problem. This is something that students and practitioners run into. I remember one time I went into a defense company, and I was going to be working with them on a reliability plan on a certain contract, and I always touch base with management and ask them about their reliability activity, this type of thing, and they steered me down the aisle. Their reliability activity was down the aisle somewhere, and I thought, I'm going to go talk to that person first, and I'll get back to management. And their entire reliability focus was MIL Standard 785 in this company.
That's the one that lists all the different activities and tests.
Yeah.
Possible.
Yeah, exactly.
Tasks. Yeah.
Exactly. It's sort of a prescribed or pre-populated reliability plan. And the reliability engineer would basically copy paste that MIL standard and give it a title. And that became the reliability plan. So I went back into the management and said, and started asking them what kind of support they give. And there was virtually nothing. Mm-hmm. It was delegated. It was a reliability activity that was delegated. And it was essentially a checkbox. So that would be the extreme end, where you could imagine a student or a practitioner working in a company that has nothing in terms of support from the management. They're expected to somehow accomplish reliability as if it was a calculation or some type of duty that you can do that doesn't need teams or doesn't need support.
Well, I don't know. I don't want to go into a one-upsman conversation on you. I think there are worse out there. And
yeah, but, yeah.
You know, and sometimes it can be an active reliability is not important, or it's a misunderstanding of what it is, or all kinds of things. But, you know, when you're faced with that, if you recognize, as a listener to our discussion, if you recognize that you're getting either lip service or you're just not getting management support, you need to break that down a little bit. Is it misunderstanding of what the role of reliability engineering is in the team, or is it they don't see the value of the activity? Maybe it's, and you see this a lot in startups, I'm sure you see it too, Carl, is where it's, we got to get to market and we don't have time to deal with reliability. We'll get to that later. And that's a real motivation. Yet if your first product is a complete failure, the consequence of missing that investment in reliability can be a career ending or a company ending.
So yeah, exactly, Fred.
You know,
exactly. I think you're right that that there's an educational or an enlightenment aspect to it. And this company I was thinking of in the story in the defense company, they had a very heavy focus on fixing problems.
Mm-hmm.
And so one could consider that that's a reliability activity. In other words, root cause the problems and use techniques to follow up and ensure they're fixed. But no focus on preventing problems. I think that's probably more common than the entire lack of support.
Well, I know I've talked about that concept with Adam on another episode, and I'll have to remember which show it was, and I'll put it in the notes. But this concept of and it seems to be an American thing for some reason is that. If you stay up all night or all weekend and you come in and you solve a major customer problem or you minimize a major field escalation type issue or something like that, you're considered a hero. You get promoted, you get the parking spot, you get all this cool stuff. And it, even though it's not overt, the reliability during the design and manufacturing phase gets minimized because, oh, we'll fix it later. And if I happen to be the guy that fixes it, I get recognition and reward. So there's no benefit to fixing it during the design process. And that's a management role, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I remember Deming talked a lot about that. The heroes are the firefighters. And you mess it up and fix it later, you become the hero. So yeah, that's very true. I do think there's a time element here. And getting back to the roadblock thing, I think one of the roadblocks with management is they're focused on near term. And understandably, they have to fix problems, and preventing takes much longer. So part of the entrance point, or how do we educate management, is to convince them that it is worth the effort to spend the time in design. To design in reliability, to design in quality, to design in maintenance, all the other aspects,
mm-hmm.
Even though the payoff is not immediate, whereas the payoff for fixing the problem is immediate. So I think there's a time element, and that's part of the roadblock.
It's like selling insurance to some degree. Is if I minimize the field failure rate, our warranty costs will go down, or our customer satisfaction will go up, or whatever. Yet that, dependent on the product, that may take 3 months or 3 years before it realizes itself. And
that's
you're
right.
So if we're focused on quarterly results and shipments on time, you have to demonstrate or prove that investment is well worth the effort.
Yeah, and this also comes down to the budgeting, the way companies are organized,
mm-hmm.
Because the field servicing is in one budget, the design is in another budget, and the testing is in another budget.
Yeah.
And so how to convince them that it's worth spending money to prevent problems that would then lower the budget in the field servicing, that's a difficult sell. But in fact, one of my mentors taught me years ago the importance of life cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Life cycle in reliability costing and reliability management. And maybe that's another approach to overcoming that roadblock, is to broaden out the management's concept to include the life cycle of the product from concept all the way through end of life.
Yeah, it's not an unknown concept. I think many, many teams and management folks intuitively understand that. It's just that they're faced with 30 or 40 different competing priorities, and reliability is just in and of the mix. Yet, it's just, it's hard to sell reliability on fear. I'm thinking of the Volkswagen debacle going on now. It's not really a reliability issue, yet most companies don't want to be featured on the nightly news, you know. And there are plenty of, like, the Boeing battery packs igniting. It could be argued that's a quality issue, not a reliability issue, but it's a failure in the field, and it doesn't take many to ground your fleet, which is It's huge.
That's true. The and the other think about electronic devices. The social media is so prevalent that if you introduce a product that has a serious flaw to it, everybody finds out about it.
Well, you know? I did that when I updated my Mac a couple days ago. It was released last week, and I was traveling, so I looked at it Saturday, and it's like, let me check the forms first, and I just said issues with the new upgrade. And there were a handful of pages, and here's issues, and none of them seem life-threatening, except updating the Microsoft Office suite. And it's like, don't do that because it just doesn't work. And so, and that's only a day or two after the launch, and I already had all of this info about what was or wasn't working. Yeah, it's out there.
You know, just reflecting on this, I think if I was to summarize the single most important thing that reliability engineers can do to overcome this roadblock of management support or lack of management support is to begin teaching and preaching and encouraging a focus on prevention. And that means a focus on prevention from funding and from tools and from planning, this type of thing. So and it's not a quick fix, because there's a culture of firefighting and a culture of prevention. And that's where we have to shift that focus to prevention in the company in order to get the backing that's needed for reliability.
Mm-hmm. And make plausible statements about the value of that prevention. And the simplest one is, if you've got a 10% annual field failure rate, and say, if we cut that in half, we save X million dollars per year. Mm-hmm. It's worth putting $100,000 into it. And you have to talk in management speak to get there.
Yeah. Totally agree.
Now, another thing I've seen in this, I don't know if it's related, because I think it's not a prevention technique. It's, well, reliability is just testing. We just need to test it, find the flaws, or prove that it's good. And then that's my reliability program. There's that mentality of, I just test it in.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen that in many companies, including the where I worked at General Motors. And when I picked up the reliability group in the late 1980s, the focus was primarily on testing. It was on calculating reliability through testing and through other types of prediction techniques, mm-hmm. as opposed to what can we do to actually achieve reliability, which is frankly, much more difficult.
Well, it's kind of a chicken and egg. The way I think of it is that if you've got a new technology or a novel, especially mechanical designs, like a new hinge for a door, we don't know the failure mechanisms. So testing is a great way to go find out if you're testing to failure, if you're testing to explore failure mechanisms, if you're providing feedback to the design team. I think that's a good role for reliability testing. Yet what I've seen, and this might be, we're back to the management perception of reliability, is that I, like the 785, is I go do a high temperature humidity test independent of anything related to the failure mechanism. I test three units and they pass, and I deem it reliable. There's no model or relationship or focus on learning anything. It's just test the pass. And we see this all the time today.
Yeah, I've been involved in debates. Should we focus primarily on the design-in tools, or should we focus primarily on the reliability assurance tools? And I always come down personally on both. Mm-hmm. I don't see a way you can fully design in reliability and abandon most of your testing. And conversely, we certainly don't want to design it any old way and then begin the reliability plans or the reliability programs with testing. So there's really a balance between those two. And like you say, if there's more new technology, you may want to front load certain types of testing that identifies failure mechanisms so that you can understand the physics of how things fail.
I agree. I use that concept of a balance overall. And it's kind of the balance between what Michael Peck and Kals at University of Maryland talk about of physics of failure, and you can design in reliability without doing any testing using physics of failure modeling.
Yeah.
And then the other end is the late Greg Hobbs saying, oh, it's just build, test, fix. Run to failure on every prototype over and over again and just keep fixing what you find. Make it very, very robust. I think there's applications for both, yet it's in vast majority of products, it's what's the right balance. And it's probably a subject for another episode.
Well, it might be, but you know, this is something that that comes to mind to me here is very often companies end up with some type of personality or somebody who's really outspoken mm-hmm. that has I'll call it a hobby horse, where they have a special tool. Maybe it's Taguchi methods, or maybe it's physics of failure, or maybe it's HALT or whatever. And that personality drives that tool in place, and that becomes like the centerpiece, like a hobby horse reliability plan rather than a balanced reliability plan. So I often walk into companies and see a more prevalent approach because of the personalities that have gained that notoriety from that approach.
Yeah, I think it's not notoriety though, Carl. It's it worked. You know,
yes.
it was in one program, one situation, it created a benefit that they recognize and they go, oh, we need to double down on that and do it all the time.
Yeah.
But the product, it changes, the technology changes, what they can learn from that approach changes, and it may diminish or it may improve. But it goes back to that. It's management support, but now it's in the flexibility of the approach. So it's
just as a one little, microcosm or a little window into that, a couple decades ago at General Motors, we would bring in the Taguchi family mm-hmm. and we'd all get, the management would get trained in Taguchi, and then suddenly there'd be this incredible drive on every project we had to find a Taguchi project. In other words, every car line, we'd have to come up with the Taguchi projects. And that became like a centerpiece for a little while.
Well, GE was Jack Welch, kind of forced everybody to do Six Sigma.
Six Sigma, exactly.
Right.
And you have to step back from that, because one of the things I learned from that, Fred, was it's not about getting one tool in place. It's about understanding when to use the tool. I mean, we are blessed with a tremendous number of tools and quality and reliability. I think the skill is more in knowing when to use the tool as much as how to use the tool.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. Well, I'm looking at our timeline, and not that we have a fixed schedule or have to do a commercial break or anything like that, yet I'm thinking the two pieces that we talked about is the management support, it being there or being proactive, I think is the key word there. And then the mindset is probably just one symptom of a management support, is that you focus on just testing or on a single tool, and without it being adaptive, so that each time you create a reliability program, it focuses on picking the right tools for the right value that you need to get, and whether it's feedback to the system or minimizing variability or whatever. But it's a blend of that management support, making sure you present the tools and techniques that need to be applied to great effect in a compelling way in management speak. And then I think it's probably going to be another whole episode, is how do you manage up, right? How do you, as a reliability engineer or reliability manager, how do you work with the design, the manufacturing, and management teams so that make good decisions and create the support?
Yeah, excellent point. And that is probably another episode and when we do that other episode, I want to also consider and talk about the mistake that some management makes about delegating reliability as opposed to staying involved mm-hmm. throughout.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks, Carl. And I hope you the listener have enjoyed your cup of coffee with us this morning and learned of a couple of things. Please let us know what you think of the episode and leave a rating or review at iTunes or send us a message directly. We sure love to hear from you. And if there's any questions that we prompted, we'd like to address the ones that come straight from the audience and from you. So thanks, Carl. And thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. Till next time, have fun. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.